Hi, and welcome to Let's Talk Data, the podcast for IT professionals by IT professionals. In this episode, we're tackling the five keys to mastering the art of the request, the hidden magic behind getting your colleagues to help you, something we all find challenging. Let's Talk Data is brought to you by Proact and NetApp, and your hosts today are myself, Tony Gent, Christian Lehrer, and Lisa Marie Enan. The Art of the Request, which is a white paper I found in the Harvard Business Review, which really stuck with me and actually has quite a lot of impact on the way that I do my daily life, if that makes sense. I'm not in the office. I don't see people IRL. I'm almost, all my meetings, I suppose, are going to be via meeting software. Very little face-to-face interaction. And this means that I'm much more dependent on email and non-verbal communication, chat messages, things of that nature. So this article about five key ways for mastering the art of request, really, I found quite interesting. So before we get started, Christian, Lisa, how have things changed from a communication perspective for you over the last 2 or 3 years?
So as you said, Tony, I was working from home also before, so not a very big change there. But yeah, there are some differences with always being at home and getting the right things done from colleagues or together with colleagues is sometimes challenging. So I'm really interested to learn how I can manage my requests in the future.
Mm. Lisa?
So yeah, what I find is that some What I find that some site informations are missing, because before COVID, I was quite often in the office. So I started at Proact in the time of COVID, but at a time where it was not too active, basically, and we had a lot of people in the office still. And you get some site information because just people walking past your office and are like, hey, just to let you know, this and this is happening. And now I have to request this information because nobody's walking past my home office and is like, ah, now that I see you, I remember I wanted to tell you that. So I have to ask for information more and be more active about getting some information than I was when I was 3 times a week in the office.
It's also been said that businesses are actually slightly different as well these days, and the fact that business structures tend to be a lot more team-based and a lot less manager-heavy. And that what that tends to mean is there's lots of separate teams that all interact rather than a manager asking for the information. Quite often it's peers from other teams asking you for information, asking you for help, and you having to do the same with people from other teams. So there's no management authority with you sort of going to somebody who works as one of your subordinates and saying, I need you to do this task for me. It's a lot more about going to somebody at the same level as you. And do you find that as well?
Yes,
definitely. Absolutely. As you said, hierarchies are getting flatter, and that means we have quicker ways to interact, but that also means we have a lot more connections than before, where we would have to go to one or two people, or maybe based on the department or something to ask for things. We now have like kind of this network of people that we talk to every day, basically. And so it's getting harder and harder to really follow up on things and understand who's doing what or supposed to do what and get which information or which topic done. So, yeah.
And definitely a part. Again, same with international companies as well. So at the end of the day, if you work for the security team in Germany, or then who do you speak to for the networking team in Sweden or the UK? You know, very difficult to tell, not immediately obvious. So quite often with larger businesses, it's very difficult to know who to speak to.
Yes, I find that as well. I mean, until a few weeks ago, I was a one-person department, so for the portfolio and partner management in Germany. And I was the one people asked to know who am I calling for this topic and who am I calling for that topic. And then at the beginning, I was the one sweating because I had no idea, but I was going to find out. And after a few weeks, I'm luckily very, very good in this perspective and know which one to call. But especially in my field, I have so many contact points that it wouldn't even be possible to go always over a manager. I mean, I'm talking to sales to get their needs correct, and then talking to the technical team. And if I would do all of that contact through a manager, then my manager wouldn't do anything else than making calls for me.
Absolutely. So I think the other thing that I've always found quite difficult with regard to this sort of requesting of information or asking other people to do jobs for you is, generally speaking, there's always a fine line between demanding that your work be done. So taking the sort of like a authoritarian approach and saying, I need you to do something for me, when in reality you have no superiority over the person that you're talking to. But also there's the friendly, light-handed approach, when in reality you receive either no commitment or no response in some instances because of the fact that you've been friendly and light-handed, but they've got other things to do. Thank you very much. So it's a challenge.
Absolutely. What I think is even more challenging is sometimes you assume that somebody knows what to do and will give you the right answer when you ask for it. Tony, can you do XYZ? And you say, yeah, sure. And then you come back and I said, can you do XYZ? But I meant, can you do XYZ, list it and do a summarization of that, which I would assume that's the normal part of the job. And you might not be knowing that even. So how do you handle that?
No, exactly. So let's have a look at these sort of five key points to master the art of the request. So I suppose...
Now I'm listening very good.
Yeah, so the key thing here is none of this sounds like rocket science. I'll put to you at this point, but it's quite interesting. And the first one is the one you've just raised, is the fact that what do you want? I find all the time that people know what they know and assume that because they know it, you know it. And really what it means is we have to be specific when we're putting down something that we're requesting, and we have to try and assume that the person who we're requesting it from hasn't got the foggiest idea what we're talking about.
So yeah, I had that in the working context a few weeks ago. I was writing a service description with a technical colleague that I didn't went to this process beforehand. And the last few times I always had the same colleagues that exactly knew what I was expecting. And then after a few moments, he was like, what are you expecting in that abstract? What should be in there? And for me, it was absolutely logical what should be in there. And so I didn't explain it to him again, because all the processes before, I had colleagues that have done this over and over again. And I was like, yep, you definitely have a point. First of all, I tell you my expectations, what we need in there, because it felt like we didn't got to a point together, because I didn't expect something so technical, because it was for a CEO, like targeted to the CEO audience basically, and not to a technical colleague. And he was coming from the technical perspective. And when we got that sorted out, we directly clicked and he knew what I wanted. But I'm also very good in being like, yeah, I know what I know. And maybe not telling people that right away.
I think that's where we fall in pretty easily, everyone. So.
We love an acronym as well, don't we? So we throw acronyms around like nobody's business. We throw technical words around that mean things to us that nobody else has the foggiest idea what we're talking about, but we still use them outside of work.
Yeah, I always have that stupid joke when somebody talks about acronyms. I'm sorry to bring it up here. Do you know what a TLA is?
No, I don't.
It's a three-letter acronym. And now what is an ETLA? It's an extended three-letter acronym.
So, is that the same
sorry
as
for
a
that one.
Four-letter?
And for example, I had the thing with we call our business unit directors BUDs for short. And I at the beginning thought they're talking about some friends, like our BUDs, because I thought it was from buddies. And nobody told me. And then in another meeting, I got behind that, because it was the BUD from Germany or from Central. And I was like, okay, possibly not a friend from Central. And then I went through and was like, business unit director sounds quite right.
Yep, absolutely.
Could have been beer also, right?
Yeah, good. Do you have, maybe if they're a bit underweight, it could be Bud Light. You're right. We use it all the time. And actually, management, I suppose, does it as well. I think of it as from an IT perspective, obviously. But management do it as well with when they have meeting groups. So they'll have, I don't know, sales leadership team, operational management team or whatever it turns out to be. They will just use those three letter acronyms and expect everybody else to know what they're talking about. But yeah, no, quite common. We do. But I think the key thing there is rule number one, be specific about what you're looking for, which I think is good advice. At least be aware about the fact that you quite often, people don't know. Okay. So, rule number two, and I've done this one many times as well, is who do you want it from? I told you this is basic stuff. How many Good times one. Have you sent an email to at least three different people? So the two box has three people in the header. I do that all the time. But of those three people, who's doing the job? Any ideas?
Nobody.
Nobody?
Nobody, almost certainly. Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And I think that's really, really important from the point of view that quite often we send it to many people, or we send it to a team and hope that the team will take care of it. And I think it's if we want to get anything done, we have to make sure that we aim it at one person. If that one person then can't do it, then they should come back and say, no, this needs to go to X. But I think the point is I do it all the time whereby I'm not sure who it's supposed to go to. Therefore, I send it to more than one person, and I then kick myself afterwards and think, no, that's not right.
So yeah, I had that at the beginning when I was trying to get technical documentation from the teams, that it was like going in with the tasks, and I had a few tasks, and I was like, and who is going to do that? And then there was silence, and then there was silence. And at the end, it's the same one or two people who are saying, okay, I'm going to do it. And now I'm going in there with I thought about it beforehand, and I'm like, okay, that's your task, at least from my perspective. And then the person saying, yeah, okay, you're right. That's closest to what I do every day. Or they're saying, okay, no, from an expertise side, somebody else should do it. But with that, we are now a lot quicker. And I also sometimes throw in there, you all get a task. So get one that's closest to your expertise, then you don't have that much work.
Absolutely. Threaten them when in doubt.
I like that feature of Outlook when you add mention someone, it will automatically put that person into the to folder. So I often start my mail with only one person there, directly naming the person. When there are other tasks that have to be distributed somehow, I really add mention the people in the text, and then they will be added automatically. So This way we make sure the right people stay in the to field.
Nice.
Because I know a lot of people who don't even read their CC mails. Do you know that also?
No.
They have an automatic rule that everywhere they are in CC, it will just go to the I will never watch it folder.
Whoa.
So,
wow, that was good of me to give you that information, give you that for information, and then you completely ignore it. That sort of stuff. Nice. Okay, good. Hopefully they weren't managers in that situation. That would be a bad idea.
I won't talk about specifics here.
Very true.
I know.
Okay, interesting. Right. Okay, point number three then of our five tips. So the next one is, when do you want it by? But you have to avoid doing two things. ASAP, or as soon as possible. Because how long's ASAP? Is it in the next 30 minutes or in the next 2 weeks? It's entirely subjective and down to the person who's receiving the email. So don't use ASAP. And the other thing is, don't say now. You've got to be realistic about the timeframes that you request. If you do an impossible time frame or an overly demanding time frame, then generally speaking, you won't get anything back. And I think that's fairly straightforward. But again, I think I've regularly send emails, I suppose, whereby I request somebody to do something and say, can I have it next week? But I'm not specific enough about exactly when it's going to be. I will do it because I don't want to put that person under pressure. Again, they're not a subordinate. They're a teammate. So I don't want to be forcing them to do something for me. but you do have to be specific. Otherwise, when do they know? They know they need to have a deadline to be able to work to.
Yes, and you shouldn't be the person who where it's always super important. Because I feel like I write in my mails when it's not that important. It's like, hey, just give it some time. I need an answer till maybe in 4 weeks, but it's not that important. And if it's that important, I feel like it's a lot better perceived. Because then they are, okay, she wrote me 10 emails and one of them is important. Then I maybe really treat it as an important task instead of somebody who's always saying it's important. Like, not everything is important at work or needs to be done till the next day.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Absolutely. And another thing as well that I try to do is, if your time frames change, if my time frames change, I need a job doing by a certain point, but the meeting maybe that job is required for has now moved on a couple of weeks, it's now being delayed, then immediately pass that delay on to the person who's doing the task for you. Because there's nothing worse than them working hard to try and deliver something for you and then you find out that...
Yeah. Do you know that, or did you ever encounter that when somebody told you, we need that by end of day, and he or she was somewhere else, not in the same time zone or even same cultural region, like say end of day on Fridays in Southern Germany might be 1 o'clock, end of day somewhere else on Fridays might be 5 p.m. So what is end of day?
I think in Germany, it's when you start drinking, isn't it? Isn't that the way it works?
Maybe.
Same in the UK. Definitely on Friday.
That's really something that I don't like. Be specific, people. Come on, give me a time and then I can work towards it.
Cool. Right, there's two more to go, so we'll cover those off. This one's an unusual one. The fourth one is, what are the conditions of satisfaction? And what that really means is that you need a valid response rather than a disagreement, if that makes sense. And there's two things here. There's a tendency with people responding to emails to not actually respond to your email, but to become the devil's advocate and actually to go in there and say, well, hold on a minute. Why do you want this? Surely we should be looking at this instead. Surely we should be changing this. And actually, so not responding to your request, but instead almost posing a completely different angle. And while that's maybe useful, the temptation is for some people, certainly, to do it a lot and for it to be their default method. So if you have teammates like that in your organization, one of the suggestions is the fact that you should ask everybody for at least two positive responses or two ways forward they feel that you should follow. And then if you want to be a devil's advocate, then by all means, throw one critical response in. So you always end up with at least a positive response as well as a devil's advocate response. And I thought that was quite interesting.
And also with the conditions of satisfaction, I always feel like it's great to put a sentence into to make sure what you like searching for. I learned, for example, when I ask for documentation, I'm like saying that if for a new colleague, it should be possible to do that installation if it's a standard case without any further help or just with that document and document XYZ. And I think then you don't get a range of somebody's writing 2 pages and the other colleagues you're sending it to is writing 30 pages, then you meet somewhere in the middle, hopefully.
Yeah, have a defined standard and work to it. My favorite thing in the world.
What you said, Tony, ask for an answer from everyone who you want to reach, because that's what I find. Oftentimes people are kind of lay back. They know somebody will answer, and most of the times it's one of the two colleagues who always answer and always want to be helpful, and the other ones might be like, yeah, there will be somebody answering. I don't have to. So really being specific here and saying everyone provide 2 opinions or 2 points or whatever to get everyone out, and also make a plain playing field or level playing field for all the opinions that are there.
Yeah, agreed. It's not maybe part of the same thing, but I find this an awful lot with email, and not necessarily even work-related email, just email in general, I'm amazed how many times people get the wrong end of the stick, whereby, I don't know if that's just an English phrase, but whereby they read something and completely misunderstand what you're asking. and come back with a nonsensical answer that doesn't cover what you said at all, because they read the first five letters and then made it all up in their heads.
Yeah, and oftentimes it's also they are getting angry without you meaning it or something like that.
Yeah,
I think that's very typical thing for email, and also especially for WhatsApp messages or something like that.
Yeah,
where it's even faster and the reactions are even faster. So
yeah,
careful there.
So I think the key thing for me as well is I suppose that's why I try not to send long emails as well, because if people can get the wrong end of the stick on a relatively short email, then don't give them a long one. The final one.
Oh, skip through this.
The final one is, and this is actually goes back to a point that Lisa's probably already raised, is what is the context? So I think this is the key thing here is, if you're defining something that you need done by a certain point in time, explain why, so that they understand the time frame is for a reason rather than you're just arbitrarily making it up. So I think the key one here is something like, oh, I need this report by Thursday because the person I'm sending it to is on holiday on Friday. You know, that sort of stuff. But I think sharing meaningful information about why it's required is really important, because it validates the fact that you asked for it in the first place. And it means that the person who is being requested to do the work actually can go, well, yeah, okay, I can see that there's a genuine reason why this is required. And I can see there's a genuine reason why I'm being asked to do it. So I think providing a context for what you're asking for is really helps to make sure you get a response back.
And what if I respond, yeah, I'll take a look? What do you do then? What is your response to those things? Because that's what one also gets sometimes.
And I think this is it. I think there's supposed to be four acceptable responses.
Okay, I have to write them down.
They are accepting, i.e. yes. So declining, i.e. no, I can't, I'm busy. A counter offer, which is I can't do it by Thursday, but you can have it on Friday. Or a committed delay, which is I can't look at this just yet. Let me have a look tomorrow and I'll let you know when I can do it. So something whereby either way, you're getting back a positive response. What we all tend to get is a non-response response. Good name. Which is, sounds good. Let me check. I'll do my best, as you say. I'll get someone to sort it. Or I'll see what I can do. Or something like that, whereby no commitment whatsoever. And it just doesn't go anywhere. And I think the best advice in that situation, I think, is very solid. It's essentially throw it back, but throw it back with a defined element. So, for example, great, I'll follow up with you in 2 days and find out who you assigned it to. Or great, perfect, let's discuss on Tuesday PM. I'll create an appointment so we can confirm that you're taking it on. So you're committing them back into that process to actually then be able to do the work. And if they can't do the work, then fine. They can tell you they can't do the work. And then you can go on and try and find somebody else who can, or you can make decisions about doing it. The key element of these here is really to try and make sure you're not stuck waiting.
So now we know how to do it.
Well, in theory. And
yeah.
We're going to attempt to do it. That's the key point.
Just put it into our normal day life.
Easy. Exactly. So the five key points of the art of the request, they are: what do you want? Be specific. Who do you want it from? Don't send it to 15 people. When do you want it by? Again, be specific and be realistic. What are the conditions of satisfaction? I.e., make sure that they're not providing you with devil's advocacy responses. What's the context? I.e., provide them with more information so that they understand why you're doing it. And remember that the responses that you get back, don't let them get away with providing you with a non-response response. I hope it's useful.